Welcome again to our men's breakfast. We have a lot of content today. We are privileged to have three of our serving side-by-side mission partners with us today. So I'm just going to go ahead and really accelerate and get this going and really look forward to our speakers today. But we do have a few announcements. Jim Gebhardt certainly has a lot on his plate happening right now. And as we know, we have the Commons Project groundbreaking that occurred yesterday, and Jim could not be here, but he asked that to extend and to remind all y'all just to, when the sun rises, I mean, we get a little bit of rain today, but when it's out there, the beautiful sun, take a look and you'll see the project. And I fully expect that Jim's going to be providing a lot of updates to us over the months. Let's see here. We do have some PowerPoints, so I think I'm just going to get right into introducing the speakers. But before that, just to talk about upcoming men's breakfast plans, and what I'm really super excited about is right now on the date of May 11th, targeting to have a men's dinner. So really excited to reestablish a men's dinner. I coordinated with Jacob, our speaker. This speaker is a friend of mine. His name is Matt McGee. He has been on the national circuit of speaking, and he lives locally here in the Alpharetta area. So I'm real excited about that. To really put that together, almost need a little bit of committee of things. My wife's like, hey, what are you doing? You need a lot of help. You can get some help organizing with the dinner and all the festivities. And I'm not sure if any of you attended. We had a dinner that happened about 8 years ago. And if you did, yeah, thank you. And where did we have it? At the Fellowship Hall. And it was a packed, it had steak dinner. Exactly. So my plans is to have another steak dinner. And I would love to reestablish that and make that just a reoccurring event here at the church. So more to come on that, but if you are available to maybe help plan, coordinate that, and as you can imagine, let's just kind of be practical about it. Putting stakes together, it would be real helpful for Jacob, Stephen, and the head. So is it reserved seating? How do we plan and orchestrate some of that stuff? Kurt, I'll be pointing to you. I go on so many things, but real excited about that. So more to come on that. Look for content in the coming weeks here. Okay, so to introduce our serving side-by-side mission partners today, we are blessed to have, right, our associate pastor of missions and service, Pastor Miriam Brown. So if you please come up here to introduce, so wonderful.
Serving side-by-side is
it's going to be that kind of day, isn't it? I feel bad for Kevin.
He's even muted right now.
You know, they did the groundbreaking yesterday.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering when they did that, if there were any wires that might have been they get loose.
Yeah, I've had that happen.
Terrible.
That's a good point, because it's always
ahead
good.
Of this year as we think about these names and the many faces these nonprofits and missionaries represent. Just a huge thank you very much. The theme that we have for our Missions and Service Month and the whole year is from Joshua 24. For me and my house, we will serve the Lord. My hope, my prayer for our church is that we find people that we love and we serve together. So maybe it is a spouse. Maybe it's a child. Maybe it's a sibling. Maybe it's a neighbor that we just really are close to. My hope is that our witness is coming together with people we love to do something bigger for the kingdom of God. One of the amazing things about this church, it's unlike any other. When we decide to take on a ministry partner, we don't just do it a little. We do it a lot. We don't just write a check. We don't just send a team. We do everything a long-term impact. And so the three ministry partners you're going to hear from today are great examples of that. You're going to hear from a seminary. It wasn't enough for us just to support people to be educated. Now there's a seminary who's selling water, who has a huge system, who are impacting villages of people that we will never meet. We've continued that long term. We have asked for learning. It wasn't enough for us just to give sandwiches. We're going to do something bigger. We're going to make sure kids go to school, and we're going to adopt an entire school in Honduras to do it. And then, of course, we've got so many weather systems that come through. It's not enough for us just to look at the weather and talk about it. It's not enough for us just to look around. We have made a continued impact in Florida, in Georgia, through the Dare to Care ministry. We don't just go one time. We go every month for years. And so this is what you're going to hear a little bit about today. I'm going to pick you all in a random order. So we'll start with Phil, then we'll go to Kelly, and then we'll go to Leonard. So you will hear from these three different ministries, three different men, and how they serve in these areas. So thank you.
Thank you, Mary. And I am going to try to be brief. I know it's a lot for a guy with the last name Dodson to try to be brief at the podium. And respect who we're going to be speaking to you as well. So thank you for serving side by side with us in Honduras on behalf of some kids who otherwise would starve, literally starve. Want to help you understand the impact of what your serving side by side with us has. Got some slides that will be coming up at some point. We are what we want people to understand the most about the work that we do is the impact that your involvement has on the children in Honduras, not just writing a check or making a trip to Honduras with us to meet the kids face to face, but to understand the impact. So just a few slides here to show you. For those who don't know a lot about us, this is just a really quick look at how we became who we are today. In 2004, the discovery of Honduran poverty, discovery by Ron Hicks, our founder, an understanding of the poverty in Honduras, led him and the organization to understand 70% of the people in rural Honduras live in abject poverty. Tons of reasons why they live in these conditions, why the poverty is there. And I could answer those questions later for you if you really want to know what led to this hundreds of years after the Spaniards arrived in Central America. But 70% have less than $2 a day to feed their families. These kids wake up with nothing. And the question is, do I go to school today with an empty stomach, or do I go out and look for food? You stand in the gap for them. You serve side by side, allowing them to remain in school. 30% of, because of the poverty, 30% of Honduran kids every year drop out of school. I'll show you a number in a few minutes. It will blow your mind. But what it means is that the kids who start kindergarten, 30% don't make it to first grade. 30% don't make it because the more able-bodied they are to go out and scrounge for food, the more likely they are to spend their days doing that instead of being in school. Poverty will never end as long as that cycle is there. Kids continue dropping out of school, never to return. The idea was provide lunch at school. Kids will remain in school. It's a simple concept. It's a very straightforward concept. And Lunchless Learning was born from that idea. A real quick look at what we're doing together in Honduras. Because we're serving daily school lunches to over 2,000 kids in Honduras and plenty more that we haven't reached yet. But because we're there and you're helping us, kids remain in school. They graduate. They enter the workforce as employable adults, and suddenly they're able to support themselves and their family for the first time in their life and generations of their lives. They're able to support themselves and their families. And it's an amazing impact. It's a transformation of those families. There's a couple of numbers I want you to walk away with remembering. The first one is 30 million. 30 million is the number of kids in the United States today who will get lunch at school. There are only 10 million people in Honduras total. And here in the United States, 30 million kids will get free lunch today at school. And our tax dollars support that, and we want that. If a child is hungry, we'd rather than be in school and well-fed, right? That's what we want. That number in Honduras is zero. And what this, the perspective we want Americans to get from this is that this safety net that we have here in the US, it's multi-layered, deep and wide, from birth with WIC benefits to get formula all the way through free lunches and through high school, unemployment benefits, all the different safety net features we have here, none of that exists in a place like Honduras. So if you wake up with no food in your home, you don't eat that day, or you go out to find it and you leave school. 30 million kids in the U.S. I want you to remember that number, 30 million. The other number, remember, is 1.1 million. We just found this out in an article that was published in Honduras in a newspaper last week. Just came out that the number of children that have enrolled in school nationwide, 250,000 total, coast to coast, 250,000 kids in school in Honduras, and 1.1 million who have fallen out of the school system completely. So that means for every child in school in Honduras, there are at least four who haven't been in school for a long time. And in that cycle of, this is the reality of the cycle of poverty that employable and transform their whole family's life because they're able to become employed, support the family. What impact would that have on the people who leave Honduras headed this way? We think it would have a pretty strong impact if we could reach those 1.1 million. We can't feed 1.1 million kids today. We can't reach all, you can't reach everybody. What we're called to do as Christians is do what we can. And the number of organizations on that card that Marion referenced show that you're doing what you can. You're serving side by side with some families who desperately need it. So we're grateful for years of involvement of this church. Marion mentioned the Manuel Bonilla School. Most of the schools in Honduras, most of them are named after either a famous Honduran or a date. The school's named July 14, September 15, 3 October. And it's important. It's like we would name a school maybe May 31, Memorial Day, or July 4 here in the U.S. The school that Roswell UMC sponsors, named Manuel Bonilla, in the Las Tablas community, their entire community has been transformed by your involvement. And every year we have kids graduate from Manuel Bonilla and new kids come in. So it's just like the school lunch program here in the U.S. We fund the lunch program for all the kids in school in the U.S. Kids will graduate, new kids come in, they deserve it just as much as the kids who just graduated. And so every year there's a new crop of kids. This is a pretty significant community you support. And again, last slide would be pretty much a reminder that with this massive safety net we have in the U.S., no safety net at all in Honduras, you are the safety net for kids like this. We put the most adorable little girl we could find up there, right? She's actually holding a plate of food, and the photo got cropped. You can't see the plate of food, but you are the safety net for these kids. And God loves these children just like he loves ours. In his eyes, there's no difference between these children and ours. So thank you so much for being a ministry partner with us, serving side by side for some adorable and deserving and very grateful children in Honduras. Thank you.
All right. Good morning. Good morning. Just know you guys come for the cheese grits and bacon, but really impressed you guys come here at 6:30 in the morning just to be with each other, talk about Jesus. So that's really great. I'm really appreciative to be back here. Roger and Mitchell and I keep up all the time, but the rest of y'all, it's been a minute since I've seen you. So I'm really glad to be back here. I grew up in a Baptist church in Memphis, but I really feel like I grew up as a disciple here. So I still love and appreciate this church. And we appreciate y'all because you support a really amazing ministry in Kenya. And so I'm here to talk about Divine Providence Training Center. It's a seminary in Kenya for pastors who otherwise couldn't go to seminary. And I'll talk about why that's so important. But Friends of Divine Providence Training Center is actually a Georgia nonprofit corporation. And then we raise funds to help support the seminary, which is Divine Providence. So here's why this is so important. Kenya has tons of pastors who love the Lord and have a zeal for preaching and being a pastor, but they don't really know how to do it. And in many times, their scriptural knowledge is poor. So there's nothing more dangerous than a pastor with zeal and passion, but who has some misplaced theology and understanding of scripture. A lot of times they just haven't had access to Bible school. And so the only thing they know is what other Kenyan pastors have said, which may be wrong. And also it's kind of mixed in with African tribal practices and beliefs. And so two women in this church, Beth Casey and Sally Gresham, were given a vision from God to help change that in Kenya. So in 2008, really Beth started going to Kenya and exploring how to do that. And so whatever that 14 years ago, they really launched an effort to try to train pastors. So what we're trying to do really is equip these pastors with a sound theological basis and also just training about how to be a pastor, how to be an effective pastor. And we do that by partnering with the school over there, and they have their own fully functioning Kenyan board who oversees and runs the school. So we don't run the school. We don't tell them how to conduct the school. We're just here to be support partners for them, raising funds and then also providing some advice, mainly business advice about some projects I'll tell you about. So how does it work? Typically a class is 25 pastors, and we have a campus right outside Nairobi, out in the country, a beautiful campus where they have tents and they have a stone building where they teach. We have an American educated faculty. So they're well-equipped faculty that teaches them. And these 25 mainly rural pastors are brought in to campus for 2 weeks, once a quarter. And they do that for 2 years. So they come in for kind of intensive study for 2 weeks on campus. They're sent back home with homework and some preparation for the next session. And they do that for 2 years. And so this has been going on now. We've graduated 5 classes. And we have over 150 pastors who've been trained. These are pastors that otherwise would not be able to access any kind of sufficient training. One, they don't have the money. And two, they may not even have the high school graduation diploma or other kind of prerequisites to get in any sort of mainstream Bible college or seminary that's in Africa. So they come completely scholarship. They don't pay anything because they don't really have any ability to pay anything. And they're housed and go through the program and graduate. So, but from the very beginning, we wanted to set this up so that we weren't creating a dependency model where we just paid their bills every month and they were relying on us for all the funding. So from the very beginning, we've been trying to invest in the school in a way that leads them towards self-sufficiency. So the first thing we did in the lower right was we built this campus for them. And so they can use that campus to rent out as a conference center. They host mission teams. And so they're able to generate some income. It's got, I think, 10 luxury tents. A conference center hall, a dining hall, everything that you'd need to be able to make some income on that. But really the big thing is about 5 or 6 years ago, we built a water bottling facility for them. At first it was all manual. So it was, filtered water. They have a very productive well. With manual labor, they were able to bottle and cap and seal the bottles and sell them and make some money. But as we started into that, the government came in and said, if you're going to sell bottled water commercially, you need to have a fully automated plant. So we had to kind of up our investment a little bit. We bought equipment from China, and now they have a state-of-the-art water bottling facility. They have the capacity to bottle up to 4,000 liters an hour, which is a lot more than we can sell today. But we're all set, and we're trying to kind of work on the selling and marketing plan so that we can scale up. And the idea, hopefully, is that this water bottling facility will eventually put enough funds to run the school. And that'll put us in a position where we're no longer funding operations. We're more doing capital investments to expand their ministry, to help their pastors when they go back into the community and do some other things. So just a couple of numbers. I mean, we are small. We're about $200,000 a year in donations that we pull in. And that's enough to fund the school and do these investments that we've made. I have 156 active donors. 90% of those are RUMC congregations or the church itself. So we're very appreciative that we were launched from here, and we're still very RUMC centric. We are working to kind of expand our donor base to other churches, other people outside the RUMC community, but you guys are kind of central to what we're doing. All right. Lot of experience from legal to finance to ministry, and mainly they're people you knew. So I wanted to show these names up here. Obviously, Beth and Sally were our founders, but you guys probably know many of these names. Susan Gunner, Dave Mueller is our water engineering expert. Julia Thompson, IT professional, runs our marketing effort. Chris Burnett, Greg Griffiths, Eric Moore, Scott Schroeder. And then I even wrote some names on the side of people that are not on our board, but really have been critical to us. So Jason Scott, John Bender, Scott Manley. So we have lots of friends and supporters here. Really appreciate it. I can't remember if that was it. I think so. So I could take a question or two if anybody has any questions.
On the capital investment for the water plant, where did that money come from?
Yeah, it came from our donors. Honestly, we have a handful of families that are providing most of the funds. And so they have been instrumental. But like I said, we've got 150 donors that some give monthly, some give, as they can. And so, that's where the funds come from.
Are there many other churches involved with that seminary?
No, not really. Like I said, we're trying to expand that. And actually, Jason's been helping us with his connections with other pastors. We've taken a couple of exploratory trips where we've taken other pastors to expose them to what's going on, and hopefully they'll become partners at some point. But today, it's really RUMC and the people here in the congregation. Yeah, so it's a fantastic ministry. If you could just meet these pastors. I mean, like I said, they have a heart for Jesus. They love him and they want to do the right thing. They just need the training. So it's so great that you guys are putting them in a position where they can get really a first-class education. The director, I know, has been here several times, Paul, and so you guys probably know and love him, but he's an American-trained pastor at the Reformed Theological Seminary in Jackson, Mississippi, but he has a number of other faculty members that are amazing. And so these guys are really getting equipped to expand the kingdom in their little rural villages all over Kenya.
Mitchell.
Yeah, it's just outside of town. So it's probably 20 miles or so, but really is kind of outside of the country. Nairobi's a very urban city. And as soon as you leave, Nairobi proper, it's kind of savannah and animals. And so they're out in a beautiful plot that kind of overlooks the valley below them. And
I hope the land in Nairobi on the 25th. I take time out on my vacation. It would be hard to visit, take a cab or something.
Mitchell, I'll hook you up. I'll have somebody come get you and take you out there. Yeah, that'd be great. I'd love to hear it. Then you can come back and tell everybody what you saw. Yeah. All right. Well, great. Appreciate y'all's time. Thank you.
Joe, thanks. Yeah.
Nice hat.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm going to apologize, start, because I don't keep anything short.
Hopefully we're going to show a little video first, and we're going to, it's just the one with slides or the.
You tell me.
I don't know.
I get the YouTube up.
It's just, okay. Started at the 1 minute mark.
One minute mark.
Yeah. Right in there. That's good. So we're going to see this, some testimonials from our last trip down to Sanibel Island that we completed. So if you'll play that. And
thank you, Les. Appreciate it.
All right. I'm Bill Martis. I'm from RUMC.
Roswell.
We live in Roswell, Georgia. And down here with a team of about 15 or 16, working on a demo of a house, which is removing drywall, flooring.
We get tested, Leonard. Give us a second.
That's fine. We do the same thing at Brian's class.
Thank you. Share sound. Share. See, not just on my computer. I actually get it on screen. Sure. Do we need the volume in the back?
Thank you, Les. Appreciate it.
All right, I'm Bill Martis. I'm from RUMC.
Roswell.
We live in Roswell, Georgia. And down here with a team of about 15 or 16, working on a demo of a house, which is removing drywall, flooring, electrical, all kind of stuff. Dirty work, but it's fun. Demo, fun.
What's been the most meaningful part for you, Bill?
So I have to say two things. One is just working with this team, getting to know all these people much better. A lot of new friends we're making as we come down to these things, and just really enjoying that. And then understanding the trauma that the people, the homeowners of this house have gone through, and what a blessing it is to have someone come in and help them get started, just getting started in 4 months. Get started with their rebuilding of their home and their life.
Hey, how you doing?
Hi, I'm Randy Reynolds, Roswell Methodist Church.
What you working on?
We're working on, well, I take the little nails out of the studs once the other guys take down the wall. Nails or little screws. So we want all the studs clean for the next wallboard crew that comes in.
And what's been the most meaningful part of this trip for you, Andy?
Understanding how an event like a hurricane can really interrupt lives, people, jobs, workers, you name it. Even if you think you have a business to clean up, getting the workers in the area is nearly impossible. Plus, we make snap judgments about people, places, and things, and it's not always true. So I really have enjoyed this trip. It's my first of this kind of demolition nature, and the people are the best as well.
Thank you, Rand. Appreciate it. Hi, how you? Hey, how you doing?
I'm doing outstanding. My name is Bob Mitchell. I'm presenting the wonderful and beautiful Tom at Due West United Methodist Church.
And what you working on?
Last 2 days, been pulling off drywall, pulling up first, just rid of the damage that was caused by Hurricane.
And what's been a meaningful part of this trip for you?
Man, it's a blessing. It's also a blessing. Be able to work with the fine people from Roswell and the beautiful people from Dunwoody.
I think it was 7:45. Isn't that what? What you're seeing so far is the first two people you knew from Roswell. Bob Mitchell is from Due West United Methodist Church that joined our trip. He'll be joining our trip at the end of this month as well. But we did just some interviews with our team people, and if it will play, an interview with our homeowner from our trip down to Sanibel Island. So we're going to see if we can grab that.
Hey, how you doing?
Good, how are you?
Great. Tell me about yourself.
So my name's Kim Munger, and my husband John and I live here. And basically, storm hit, and this is what we got. What do you want to know?
Well, what's this mission team meant to you?
It's just amazing that people come and help. Every day, just looking at it and dealing with it. And we have a business here, so we help other people get their stuff straightened out, but nobody's ever really around when it comes, you know, our time that we can do it here at our own house. So when we were told that you guys were coming in, it's overwhelming. Kind of speechless because of the kindness that has been shown and, you know, camaraderie with the whole team and stuff and what they're doing and how they're working. It gets going in the right direction versus looking at the destruction every day.
Well, we appreciate you, Kim. It's an honor and a privilege to help you out.
We thank you guys so much.
So that was our homeowner in our last trip that was actually, they had not been back out to the house. They had had a business on Sanibel Island doing pools and some landscaping work and spending all their time helping other people on the island and just kind of got bypassed. So it's just a real rewarding experience to hear the people, and you don't get that very often for what we do. So I hope you enjoyed that. If you'd like to see the whole thing, we've got several different videos on YouTube for this trip, and we'll continue to do this for our trips in the future. Our next trip, got a little card on your table. I'm going to get that in first. It's March 29th to April 2nd. We'll be back in Fort Myers, Florida. We currently have a team of 11 or 12. We can take up to 20 in our group. Just give you a little idea what we do. Our trips, our DARE program, RUMC, basically kind of started back and did some work at Katrina. The DARE program pretty much started at the Katrina trip. DARE stands for Disaster Assistance and Relief Effort. You saw the Sierra little cartoon that our guiding principle is the story of the friends bringing the cripple to see Jesus and couldn't get in the house. Too many people. Y'all know the story. They tore a hole in the roof, lowered him down. Tom could tell better than me. Lowered him down. Jesus healed him. Pick up that pallet. Go. You're healed. Everybody's happy. Woohoo! Miracle. Everybody left. Everybody left happy. Guys at the house, owns the house. He looks up. I got a hole in the roof. Who's going to fix that hole? We'll fix that hole. We come in after the fact and fix the hole. So DARE is what we do at DARE. We work through UMCOR, which is financed by the Methodist Church. UMCOR has a couple of different divisions. ERT, early response teams, you have to be badged and trained. ERT people are normally the first boots on the ground after FEMA. With the disaster, kind of like Hurricane Ian, Samaritan's Purse is normally in a week before setting up. They're going to feed and help the FEMA and the first responders, search and rescue. Once search and rescue is over, UMCOR people, boots are on the ground with their ERT folks. That can last anywhere from 2 weeks to 3 months, and then it will go into a long-term recovery. DARE, Ross United Methodist, in the past has been ERT. We've been mostly long-term recovery. Just to give you an idea, we currently at Ross United Methodist Church have zero certified ERT reps. Northside United Methodist Church has 97 certified ERT reps. There are classes all the time. I'm not certified. Never had a chance to do it. I will, but I keep thinking I'll get a field promotion when I'm down. Since Hurricane Ian hit on September 23rd, no, Hurricane Ian hit on September 28th. It was a Cat 4 storm, 155 miles in winds, 15-foot water surge, 216-mile-an-hour gust. It was the most expensive disaster in the history of the United States, $113 billion. It was the most deadly storm since 1935, 174 deaths associated with that. To give you an idea, so the ERT people are on the ground, how long, isn't this a one and done deal? Hurricane Michael hit Panama City, it's a Cat 5. It only killed 74 and did 26 billion in damage. ERT is on the ground, Roswell United Methodist Church. We sponsored 12 teams just in COVID. So how long does it take? It takes forever. There's still work being done in Panama City and Central Florida. So what do we do trip? What's the trip take place? We normally plan 6 to 8 weeks out in advance. We're working through the conference. Our volunteer coordinator for the North Georgia Conference is Scott Parrish. Our volunteer coordinator for Central Florida, where we're working now, is Jill Hawken. We work through UMCOR and directed by UMCOR and the conferences. So we'll find places to stay. We'll be staying normally at churches that are offering housing to us, which will have room for cots or air mattresses. They'll normally have a kitchen facility for us. Some have, all have bathrooms, some have showers. If the showers are not available, UMCOR has shower trailers that we bring to the site, so we can use that. Central Florida, we normally leave on a Wednesday drive. We work Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, and return on Sunday. The work we do, if it's ERT work, or this trip coming up, let's just say this trip coming up on May the 29th, so check your calendars, and I'll be up here till I get three people to volunteer to go with me. We'll leave, and this is going to be considered a hybrid trip. That will be some ERT work and some long-term recovery work. ERT work is destruction, my favorite. I love to tear stuff up, and you can't mess up. There's no way to mess up. So what we're doing is we're trying to mitigate the damage from growing. We're taking out sheetrock. We're taking out wiring. We're just pulling out anything that could create a health hazard in the future. Once the ERT work is completed, we'll go to long-term recovery. So this trip could be a little bit of both. Long-term recovery as we start the rebuilding process. The homeowners have to be approved through FEMA, which in turn gives it to UMCOR and associations like UMCOR going forward, and we'll go in. Materials are furnished, we're furnishing the labor to start the rebuilding process. We don't normally get on roofs anymore. No, we try to stay off roofs, but there's plenty of interior work to do. You do not have to be trained to do anything. We can find you something to do. With our last trip, we had team 16, and we had 6 women, and our average age of our team was 69 years old. The work can be ripping out sheetrock. The work can be pulling nails. Talk to Randy Reynolds. Randy's wonderful at sitting in a chair and pulling nails and screws and staples out of studs, because we're going to leave that ready for sheetrock to go on. There's sweeping. There's total destruction. There's anything that you can do. We will supply the training for you. We will supply the tools that you need. We'll do everything and that is required, and it won't cost you anything. We are, if money is an object, we'll cover all of your expenses. Your expenses anyway would be, we normally eat breakfast at our host church. We'll make a sack lunch, dare, we furnish all of that. Then in some of the areas, we'll either cook dinner or we'll help the local economy and going out for dinner after our workday. So that dinners may be your only expense. If that's a problem, we'll pick that up as well. And that would either come through the DARE budget or it would come out of our team people. We have people that are more than happy to help you pay for anything to do. It's a wonderful, wonderful experience. I'd love, if you're interested, I'll give you the YouTube channel to go on our UMC's own. Judy Martis has created all these videos for us. Judy and Bill went on our trip. Judy is she had never done anything like this. She had been to Honduras for mission work. Bill, not so much. Randy, years ago. It's an experience like none you would ever have. Before I'll take a few questions, but I do want to read just every now and again, like I said, we don't get to see people and talk to Kim a great deal. Donors, we received a letter from, this was a trip that I took in October. The storm hit in September. I was down with an ERT team the end of October. Which was a real mess in Port Charlotte. But we received a letter back from someone there. Last night, I heard a song about how angels of mercy are sent during hard times. I am now certain that not all angels have wings or white robes. Apparently, some wear steel-toed boots and dirty, dusty clothes and have a unique aroma at the end of the day. I witnessed 17 angels in action. You don't get that. You don't get that. You get to wear a helmet that has a wonderful Chapel Roswell sticker on it. You get to wear good, dirty gloves. You don't have to wear a belt, but I do recommend good shoes. If you're interested in attending, let me know. Out of this group, if you don't want to go, I can promise you, you know somebody that would like to go on these trips. Our next one is March 29th. We'll probably have another one in May, which will be total long-term recovery, unless another disaster happens that is going. Short-term, don't let me forget, Side by Side on Saturday. We'll probably be leaving the church about 7:30. We're taking a group down to Griffin, Georgia, the tornadoes that hit, and we're going to be doing outdoor debris removal. That's the North Georgia group has been sending people to Griffin as well. I've been down there, this being my third trip to Griffin, to do this kind of thing. One more, sorry. What we're attempting to do now, Roswell United Methodist Church is joining with approximately 10 to 12 other North Georgia Conference churches and creating a disaster response alliance, which will be training assessment teams and also every church, whether it's Roswell that has zero ERTs or Northside that has 96 or somewhere in between. Everyone has trouble fielding a team. You need 10 to 12 minimum to do the work that's required. So what we're doing is putting together a unique conference alliance where we can pull from every church to field teams as we need. So we at Roswell, we're back involved in the mission field and will be going forward. So if anybody has any questions, I'd love to answer them. I'd love to go ahead and take your name down to join us at the end of March, or join us on Saturday. Thank you.
I'm going to add that one of my favorite things about the video is as people are introducing themselves and telling you what church they go to, they're wearing a different church's shirt. So that just speaks to the unity of these trips. They took the time to give shirts for Chapel Roswell, for Due West, and for Dunwoody, and they all shared into that name of United Methodism, which is really fun. There are stories too, and correct me if I am wrong, Phil, that Manuel Bonilla only went to sixth grade. And it's because of this church that a high school was created, because we did not want kids to end their education at sixth grade. Can you imagine just being not having that middle school experience and then going on to high school and finishing? So it's because of you that we actually have high school graduates now. There are stories too in Kenya where people actually put pieces of that water plant in their suitcases. That's how pieces got there. And so it's because of, they smuggled them. Thank you, Barney. Y'all are smugglers. So nice. But it is because of the trip you took that that water plant is now automated making how much water? Say that again, Kelly.
Well, they could make 4,000 liters an hour.
They can make four. They can have the potential to make 4,000 liters an hour. It's because you went on a trip with a piece in your suitcase. We don't always have the privilege of having Phil Dodson, the executive director of Lunches for Learning, and our treasurer of the Friends of Divine Providence Training Center with us. So in case you have questions or you just happen to see your church members in Sunday school classes, you have, let's see, Craig is heavily involved in this Honduran ministry. You have Tom Davis, who actually taught the seminarians for a day or 2 days. We have a wonderful time. You can ask Tom about that. We have Barney. We have Randy. They can tell you the impact of these trips. If you are not receiving an email from me, if you did not get one today, you let me know. I'm going to add you to my mission list because I'm going to send you more emails. My hope is that you continue to pray for these ministries, these three, but also all 35-ish. So if you pray with us over the month of March, you will, in fact, join the many thousands of prayers over these people and our ministries and the faces they represent. So just on behalf of our global missions team and Kenny Trigg, who is on it, thank you very much for your time and your support and your service. We'll see you on Sunday at the Fringe Putt Golf Course where you can learn more. Thank you. I'm going to wrap you up soon. Join us again for breakfast and for dinner, right? I'm sure I won't try to get those details, but I will pray us out. Gracious and holy Lord, we are so thankful for the work that you are doing and that you have called us to do. And as we hear these stories of what has happened, inspire us and imprint in our souls the desire to want to make new stories and be a new witness for this seminary and for children and for homes. Lord, there's no way that we are going to be able to see all of the faces that villages in Africa and schools in Honduras and homes in Florida and Georgia represent. But right now, we ask that you bless each and every one of them. Pour out your spirit in such a way in this entire world that we feel a sense of connection to it and a desire to make it better. And leave this place. May you bless all of the work of the day that we each represent in many different ways. And may you help us to use this day as an opportunity to show someone your love and your value. And so may we be a walking witness to the grace and forgiveness that you have shown us so that we can show it to the person in front of us. Be with us in our words, be with us in our actions, and be with us in all the decisions that we make this day. Take this food that we have eaten and make it, help it to make us stronger and give us more courage for whatever lies before us. We ask all of these things in the name of the one you sent, Amen.
Thank you so much.